So, what do you want to do with your haircut?
Well, kind of a bit like yours, actually. So I've been having it like a grey...
I've got a French crop.
Yeah, like a grey free around the side.
Yeah.
So it's much... So I think I got this done about 2 months ago. So it's like a free around the side and then shorter on top.
Yeah.
Kind of watching the temples.
Mm. Look at this
one. Ooh! Yeah. God, I didn't think that would happen to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just going back a bit on these. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not too bad, but I've got a photo of my last haircut if you want to see that. But yeah, kind of like, yeah, that's basically it.
So, Keith, you've got a bit more length at the front, haven't you?
Yeah, a little bit, but I've always wanted to try and get it shorter and shorter at the front, but I've never quite got it there. But I think, yeah, not too...
Because in a way, I think what works well... makes it look stronger at the recession area is actually if you cut that a bit shorter in the middle, then when you're pushing it to the side,
yeah,
it sort of looks a bit more even.
Yeah, okay.
Maybe we do that, take a little bit off the centre, but keep the weight here.
Yeah,
it?
Yeah,
just
cool.
So you haven't got that.
That sort of pull up,
yeah.
Forward thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, cool. Should I take the specs off?
Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
So, how many of these have you done?
That was the first one with Jamie. We literally only opened at 5 o'clock.
Ah, cool.
Yeah, I've done two others in the salon, just sort of warm up ones.
Yeah.
One talking with Sean, Dora, girlfriend. Who
yeah.
Set up power lunches.
Ah, cool.
So there's some sort of little crossovers there, you know, like using a business.
Yeah.
To using the profits from a business to do something interesting with, rather than just accumulate and expand. And it's like,
yeah, totally.
You know what goes on there? It's sort of like at power lunches.
I do know, yeah.
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 Because they started off as a. They've got a studio there as well, right?
They've got studios like rehearsal space, performance space.
Mm.
They employ the musicians there on sort of like very flexible contracts. They pay the rent from the money from the bar proceeds.
Yeah.
And so which provides a space for anyone to be able to come and put on a gig.
And when you say anyone, how do they curate it?
No,
or
not at all.
They don't.
No.
It's just
yeah.
You can just.
Yeah, I mean they do a selection. They put on some nights themselves, but
yeah.
As far as I know, anyone can go and put something on. Now that's the sort of ethos of it. Mm. This DIY music scene. Yeah. Yeah.
That sounds good. Have you spoken to? Have you looked at the DIY space for London?
Been there a
That's
few times, kind of, yeah.
Have you?
She's mates with them, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, have you been?
I've not been down, no but...
Well, I met Tom at that
yeah,
of yours,
totally.
Tom
Ratton.
Ratton, mm. yeah. And so we've actually sort of been chatting a bit as well. We've been
cool.
to a few things at the salon. And, yeah, I think they're sort of doing it a little bit more... Sean suffered with hers because it was a business. She's got investors. She has to pay security. She has to have CCTV.
Sure.
It's like it's all the stress of running the business. Whereas
yeah.
Passing Clouds as a community centre gets away with a lot more stuff.
Yeah, that's super
She's
interesting.
Registered as a business, which sort of suddenly there's a lot of protocol that you've got to follow.
Yeah, totally.
As I'm sure you know. Whereas what they're doing with DIY space is trying to keep it a little bit more open, I think, and fluid.
Yeah.
They've got more space. It's quite a big, 3,000 square foot they've got.
Mm.
So I think they might be able to make more money as working as promoters.
Yeah, sure.
Power Lunches is tiny. You can only get 100 people in. It's struggling, basically.
Mm.
It can't really do what she wants it to do because she's limited by size and she doesn't
really
want to charge more for drinks.
Yeah.
So.
Because it's busy, it's always busy, right?
Yeah, often, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
weekends, you know. And but she charges like £3.50 for a cab beer.
Yeah.
Which actually is barely enough to make it work when you're paying commercial rent and shit, you know. It's like, yeah. Yeah, so, but the thing with them at the moment. So it's been quite a while since you've had it cut.
About
your hair.
2 months. I think.
I'm going to cut it with the scissors. Do a bit of chopping.
Well, I guess you can't hear when you've got the clippers are on.
No, actually, the clippers sound amazing.
Oh, do they?
Because they're like really loud in the ear, and you sort of get the experience. Buzz, I'll play Ben's for you afterwards.
Yeah, great.
Because Ben had to do with the clippers, and it just sound incredible. Yeah. Yes, the DIY space haven't yet got their license, which is.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so it's bring your own at the moment. Mm. So I don't know what the hell they're going to do if they don't get the license, because that's how they're planning to.
Because we're Southwark talking about.
Making money.
Southwark, we're talking about problems with parking or with someone.
I'm not sure, yeah, I don't know.
I think that's kind of interesting with these, like, commercial ventures, is you quite quickly end up dealing with, just like really local issues, like planning, like, oh, no, if it's a bar, you know, you need to think about the extra people coming into the area and noise, and not just noise from...
But it's a residential, it's at the end of it, it's an industrial area, but there's a flats at the end of it.
Yeah.
So they're a bit buggered. When we went there, they were like, please don't go this way. Even though the road's there, you want to go, you've got to walk round 15 minutes, because we can't be sending people through the flats, you know, which is kind of up your area, isn't it? It's like this geography, like you said.
Yeah, exactly. And how long can that last for? And it's kind of interesting to think of how, you know, that local geography through like planning or even like smaller, like residence associations or small business associations can kind of affect like the running of the organisation or...
Totally, yeah. I mean, the next thing is they've earmarked that whole area for development as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, did you hear,
did you see the news today about the car park?
In Peckham?
Yeah.
I already knew about it. Or I already knew that they've tendered out another floor of it to be to some company from Brixton, which is like going to be putting studios in there and stuff, is it?
Well, yeah, because Hannah Barry and, there was a tender for like 800 affordable studios.
Yeah, they asked him to do it, my landlord.
Debate. And then, but that's been kicked out, and they've given the tender to some quite big property developers from West London that are going to do like 40 studios.
They're from West London, are they?
Yeah,
they're
yeah.
They're from Brixton. Hannah Barry's a part of, she's connected to the developers, isn't she?
No, I don't, I think she was connected to the original proposal. Which was, but they're not doing that. They've not gone with that. They've gone with the money.
Jesus.
Yeah, it's a bit, it's quite harsh.
It feels like Peckham's actually on the change.
Yeah.
At the moment. There's an, the building above the alleyway that leads to the Bussy building.
Mm.
It's just been a planning application going in for flats for that.
Yeah.
Which they seem to think will be the end of the nightclub, basically.
Yeah. I think it would be, like, Peckham would be interesting to compare, like, its development with Hackney. Because Hackney sort of felt that it was, you know, it happened bit by bit, and you had small independent places kind of opening up here and there, and...
It felt like there was more space in Hackney somehow. There was not a sort of concentrated centre, was there, of stuff. I mean, I know a lot of the... Like the Jamaican guy getting to, I remember being displaced from Broadway Market and stuff, like being outpriced. And I remember seeing the change there, but
that was the thing. It's like it felt like Broadway Market went, and then Chatsworth Road went, and but they were all sort of led by just like small businesses.
Yeah.
Whereas with Peckham, it feels like it's jumped that stage. Like you haven't got the small businesses there, and the developers have just gone straight in. You know, and like
there's a few smaller businesses there, you know, like the sort of refreshment rooms. I guess Bar Story's been there for a long time.
I don't know, it just feels like lot more formal. Like the development process seems like formalised, like we can make money from this.
Yeah.
This is what, you know. It's, yeah.
I just don't understand how flats can be built and then they change the area. It's like there's stuff already happening, then someone builds a flat, and then suddenly, like, there's, oh, because there's flats there, now you can't make noise there.
Yeah.
It's so weird.
Well, this is
it, the planning department. It's like, we need more houses. They're sort of quite separate, isn't it? There's a national planning
office. Yeah, I mean, I think it's, yeah, there'll be, I mean, Southwark are really keen to build more houses, so they will, you know, they will prioritise that. But
yeah.
But at the same time, I think it's, yeah, it comes down to a lot about, like, the cost of residential property is much higher than what you can get from renting it out to business. So for developers, like, in, yeah, developers will always kind of push for that. And, like, in...
Because they make more money.
Because they make more money, and, like, yeah, they'll put pressure on the council by, you know, building other infrastructure projects or just kind of general. So, but do you hear about what happened in Wapping with the Wapping project?
No.
So the Wapping project was, like, been there years, and it didn't really do much in the evening particularly, but they kind of built flats around the project, and after about 3 years, like, lots of the neighbours started complaining about noise that was already there before they moved in, and basically just shut down the Wapping project.
Jesus.
Which, like, the irony is that it's probably, the Wapping project was probably one of the things that sort of,
yeah,
made the area attractive for them to go to in the first place.
Well, that's the fucking classic,
yeah,
thing, isn't it? I mean,
but there was there was rumours around that that the property developers were, like, paying off residents to put in complaints, because then, of course, I think the developers have now got the building that the Wapping project's on. Well, yeah, it is. But
I mean, like, this has come. Overarching, looking out for the good of the area, isn't
no.
it? It's like,
I mean, it's depressing.
It just comes down to,
yeah,
this, like, money being the sort of sole focus.
Yeah. I think it's just depressing that it doesn't seem like much of it can really turn it back now.
Yeah.
Particularly, it just,
yeah,
feels.
Totally.
You know. Yeah, I don't know. You know.
But maybe your pub will.
Yeah, maybe.
Radical new model.
Yeah. Yeah, the pub. I think.
It's a lot shorter on this side than it was on that side.
Is it? That's weird. I think the pub kind of runs into the same problems about where you start, you know, where you start the pub. I think, and you know, how it changes an area, and but I don't know, I think it's London specific. I think if you did it out of London, it would be I don't think you'd have so many problems like that.
What do you mean?
Well, just,
excuse me, are you the guy from DKUK? Mm-hmm. I'm Maura.
Hi Maura.
You emailed me, I'm coming Friday the 20th.
Yeah.
Okay, I just wanted to introduce myself.
Yeah, hi, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you,
yeah,
too.
Yeah,
I'll,
yeah,
see,
we're
you.
We're going to do it in Peckham, aren't we?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, yeah.
I'll
see
you,
yeah,
in Peckham.
See you
nice
there,
to,
yeah,
meet you. What's your name?
Daniel.
Daniel, nice,
yeah,
to meet you.
Cool, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I just think, I think one of the things that we've kind of struggled with over the past year, so we've been doing it for
maybe we
a
should
year
start
now.
At the start for the sake of the recording.
For the recording. So shall I start how it kicked off? So we did, so,
and for me, I think, as,
yeah,
well, 'cause it's changed my sort of perception.
I think it's good to talk about it from the beginning, and
yeah.
I mean, it's kind of turned around a lot. So we started about this time last year, because we're all, so it's myself and Andrea Franke and Eva Rotham. And we were at Open School East for the first year. And we got... So before you guys... Because you guys were delayed and started in January, we were, and we finished in September, we were allowed to stay on in the building and just carry on with projects. But there was no teaching.
Or money.
Or money. So it was just for building. And up until that point, I think we decided that we really wanted to get a space together because there was lots of projects that we were working on. And we really got on and thought that a space was the best sort of thing to do with that. And I was interested in getting a space because I thought it would...
To carry on what was happening at Open School.
Public
event.
Yeah.
Space for you to work from.
Exactly.
Also host people in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think more than that, like, I think it was important to have studio space in it. So we had quite a set criteria. So we wanted it to more or less be a similar layout to Open School East in that you had studios in the back because some people needed studios and kind of an event space in the front. And at the time, there were more or less all of the associates from last year were talking about this plan. And it was really important for me because I just kind of felt that having a shared space together would hang on, the microphone's dropped out of my ear, would kind of give us this shared object to kind of care for. So like the actual running of the space, the administration,
which you really notice
all of that stuff
when you're at Open School East, it's everyone chipping in
and I just think
feeling like you're a part of
exactly
yeah.
And I think that having that to focus on is we would have a lot more success in carry on projects rather than just kind of meeting up every week down the pub and trying to keep that going, which in my experience has always like things fizzle out and energy drops and stuff like that. So but I think basically what happened was in September we carried on in this building, in the Rose Littman building, but just nothing happened.
Right.
We had it for kind of 10 weeks and just nothing happened throughout the whole of those 10 weeks. I think we did like a barbecue and we did a couple of events, but we had all of this space and nothing happened. So we kind of had a meeting and we were like, well, because Create offered us a space in Poplar, quite a big space at a really reasonable rate. And I think people just felt, well, we've got this big space now and nothing's happening in that.
And when you say nothing's happening, was it just no events or
no events, but studios weren't being used, just no one was coming in. And
literally
the reason
nothing.
Being was because everyone had spent the entire year at Open School East working part-time or not at all. And everyone just had to go back to work in September.
Yeah.
And that's what people were budgeted for. And I'd gone back to work full time. Other people had been kind of putting off projects. And basically just everyone had to get some money.
Yeah.
So it kind of fizzled out a little bit. And it was like, okay, well, let's carry on looking for like space or something a bit smaller or just studio spaces. And I think it was in January we were talking. I think me and Andrew had gone to an event at Birkbeck and we just sat down the pub. And I think we were just having more and more meetings down the pub. And we were just like, and we're just kind of complaining that we didn't have. We didn't have any money and we didn't have a space, and all of a sudden, like the pub, like running a pub, seemed to be like a good solution to both of those things, because you get a space, you get money from working in the pub, and you get from doing bar work or all the kind of associated jobs, and you get an event space, and you also get a chance to work together. Hi, I've not got my glasses on, so I can't see who you are. Come closer. Oh, hey man, how you doing? Long time no see.
You're
right.
You're recording this. Have I interrupted you?
Oh, you're right. Right.
Yeah.
Are you hanging around?
No, yeah.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah,
I think that.
So you've got the pub as a social space, basically.
Yeah, social space, and again, you've got this like this focus that you can work on, and I think, and you could, and the idea was, and like a very practical level. We could be working behind the bar and still having conversations about like our practices and our and the politics that we're interested in.
It's seeing people on a regular basis,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
What the salon does really well is like just feel better.
Exactly.
Like being around people, chatting to people, you know. It's nice.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
And it kind of...
Have you seen Frank Sweeney? Sorry.
It tied in,
Frank.
So yeah. Kind of the theoretical background
of
the project was that it kind of bridged two different projects. So when we were at Open School East, Andrea and Eva were working on a project called Wish You'd Been Here, which was a project looking at hosting and politics, and really they were kind of pushing at, and still are, the project's still ongoing, pushing a kind of like a radical politics of hosting and how you can think about the different kinds of labour, or think about but also make visible the different kinds of labour that go into to hosting an event. So they were running like some fairly big parties here. It's like,
yeah,
you know,
nothing like what we did.
Yeah, I mean, so, and to varying degrees of size, but I think one of them, like 300 people rocked up, and like they were really great, and they had good bands, but I think they were kind of interested in things like, you know, who does the cleaning up after when everyone goes home. Like, there's all this different kind of labour performed in kind of sweeping the floors and like, yeah, like cleaning up, and who does the toilets, and who does, you know, like all the admin around, like booking the bands, and
yeah.
And so you've got this like quite.
And they're interested in that, but you also said they're like interested in being visible. So
yeah, well, I think so. They've been trying out various things, maybe mainly kind of centred around the bar and how the bar functions. So I think they've how it's kind of progressed is they've made the bar like a lot looser, so people in the party can kind of serve behind the bar, and they've been testing out different kind of pricing structures. So they found that you know, like when they were selling drinks for quite a reason, like quite cheap, people were a lot more kind of likely to get involved with the bar, or there was a certain kind of atmosphere. But when they made like maybe the drinks slightly more expensive and maybe put some more booze in them or made them bigger or more complex, people were much, you know, much more likely to have like a service model where people had a certain expectation about what they were receiving, and maybe they'd get more impatient with if there was a queue at the bar, or there would be less room for kind of conversation in that sort of relationship between the person working behind the bar and the customer. So we've been kind of trying stuff out like that.
It's like a testing ground.
And kind of maybe we'll come back to that with an event that we've just done in Aarhus in Denmark last weekend. But the other strand was a reading group that me and Andrew have been working on called Future of the Left Reading Group, which is always makes a smile because it's it's quite a bold name, but it does have groundings because in the last couple of months, Oprah School East, we're reading a text by Frederick Jameson called Future of the Left, and it was about utopias, and it was really talking about pushing like political theory into practice. So what kind of things, so it was examining utopias from a kind of literary sense. So it's talking about Thomas More's book on utopias, and had another reference, but I can't remember what it was, but it was kind of like framing it in an idea of full employment as a kind of utopic kind of place to get to, like politically, like full employment is a really kind of political destination for the left to get to, because if you have full employment, then
what's full employment? Everybody being employed.
Everybody has a job.
Yeah.
So, but what happens is that when everyone has a job, the relationship between the employer and the employee gets levelled out, because there's no scarcity in the job market.
Right.
So the employee can't say, "I'm going to sack you," because the employee, the employer can't say, "I'm going to sack you," because the employer can just say, "Well, that's fine. I can just get another job."
Yeah.
So for the left, it's quite a utopic political position, and we were kind of interested in that, and we've been doing lots of reading since, and our discussions have been about how you can put this kind of political theory into action, so almost like coming up with a praxis.
And you've been discussing it. How long have you been doing this?
Over a year now.
Yeah.
And they're really tight. You know, like often it's just me and Andrea, and we will like meet up for lunch, and we would have read a text, and we might not even talk about the text. We might just kind of spin off of it and talk about something different. And I think the pub. The pub idea as a space was really like a place between the two projects, so a place between Wish You'd Been Here and the Future of the Left, and it kind of brought the two together as some kind of like output, be it like a physical space or some other kind of like events that we were running around it. And I think it's good to say at the moment the idea of actually physically getting a pub is of less kind of interest for us at the moment. I think we set ourselves a deadline to do it.
I thought you had a space.
No. We set ourselves a deadline for the end of this year. But I think just for various reasons that's not going to happen. But I think
the discussions are really interesting.
Yeah.
So sort of like away from how I work.
Yeah. And I think
there's like a lot of value in that, because I've just sort of started doing something. I want to learn as I'm going along, sort of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think they're both great. I think personally, like the best way to learn for me is to serve.
It is that way, isn't it? Sorry.
No, the other way.
The other way, that way.
Yeah.
So the reading groups have continued. And
yeah,
you have the studio space as well
in Tulse Hill. Yeah,
yeah.
And we kind of set that up as a pub, and I think that I think it's actually super interesting, like why that didn't work, and it really came down to like
the studio space.
Well, we've got a studio space in Deptford. But we've also got one in Tulse Hill.
I went to the one in Tulse Hill.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And we were going to set that up as like a kind of temporary pub where we could try out some events and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, and we kind of ended up, we ended up doing quite a lot of work on it and thinking about how it might be. But it, I mean, it was interesting for us because it didn't, the reason why it didn't work out was for very specific kind of like business reasons, like it was really difficult to get people to do it.
Yeah.
It was really hard to...
But it's such different architecture, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And that's what I got when I came there. It's like, there's only certain things you're going to be able to test.
Exactly. And
know, because of the geography.
Yeah.
It's not.
That's right. And it was difficult for, I mean, it was difficult for Andrea to get down there because she had Oscar, so...
Yeah.
And, like, all of these, I think, all of the stuff that we've been testing out this year, it's, like, part of it has been research into... But also, like, part of it has been kind of, like, practical research for us into, like, how able we are to do a pub. Like,
yeah.
You know, like, I've got a part-time job which, like, I really enjoy and get a lot out of at the moment and don't really want to give up.
Yeah.
And, like, that's really come down to the fact that I think, for me, the question at the moment is, does owning, and this is a question for you really, like, does owning your own business make the labour that you do different?
Yeah.
Because for me, I'm a job in, like, it's an office job, but it's like, I'm doing a bit of research, and it really feeds into my practice, and it's great. Is, will it be better to work behind a bar, essentially, and, like, sort of own that bar?
Yeah.
And at the moment, I'm kind of like, I don't know, I don't really want to work behind a bar. Like, I get paid, do you know what I mean? It's really practical, like, I get paid quite well to do something that I really enjoy.
Yeah.
And I think it's really interesting, like, I think that question goes back a lot into, like, the research that we were doing in with co-ops. It's like, does the idea that you own the company you work for make you kind of less alienated, possibly less alienated from the relationship between, like, the business and the employee? Does it make you a less alienated employee? Or does it transform the work that you're doing? Like, how does it transform the work that you're doing?
Well, the evidence is that, and you know better than me, but, like, theft in cooperatively owned companies is significantly lower, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Than the opposite, you know.
Yeah.
Companies owned by thingies. To me, I can't imagine now not working for myself anymore.
Mm.
Yeah, I sort of... How does it change it? That's hard to say. I guess the simple answer is I'm more invested in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think I've been cutting hair for a long time, but I was quite bored of it.
I remember, I remember.
And long conversations between me and you about what I should do. I was bored of working as a technician. That had run its course.
Mm.
So I was thinking about returning back to hairdressing as a way to support a sort of non-commercial an art practice with little commercial ambitions. But actually, so this sort of started, the DKUK started out of desperation, really, of just wanting to try something. And then once it had started going, as a pop-up, I thought, this is a very interesting business model. I sort of, like, I think it's an interesting way to display art. I think I stumbled on a new way to show art in amongst a functioning business. Someone described it very well the other day as how you have gallery owners who have a day job. It's almost like DKUK has its own day job to pay the rent to show and commission the work.
Sure.
But this is getting off the point of personally, how does it change my... you're just much more invested in it. I don't know if I can say much more about it.
But I guess really. On like a really kind of practical level...
I would love cutting hair again in that space.
Yeah, but you're also talking... But you've also created your own customer base, so presumably the... And this is not a very good assumption, but presumably you're talking to a lot more people that are interested in art, and, you know, like you're having, I don't want to say you're having better conversations at the moment than you might have been if you're working in Tony and Guy.
So they're definitely more interesting conversations.
Yeah.
And that's what the salon does. It's taken the mirror away and put something else at the reason, giving people to talk about something else, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so definitely, I think that's a fair assumption. It's nothing to do with the kind of people that are coming in. It's the context of the space.
And I think that's something that we were hoping for with the pub, is that the interactions we'd be having with, like, the customers would be a lot more... like creative than maybe the interactions. I think that does outweigh local weather. I mean, a lot more kind of create, like, a lot more valuable for us.
Yeah.
But I think that is a question of scale. I think for you to have those conversations, I think it's fine. Like, you probably would have them at, like, 6 o'clock on a Wednesday evening and someone's popped in for a drink, but at the same time you've still got to make money, which means having like a really busy Friday and Saturday night.
Yeah.
And I mean, of course, that dialogue doesn't necessarily have to come from conversations. It can come from like a party as well. But yeah, I think maybe there's something there about, you know, why it might be better, why the work might be better if you own your own place.
Work might be more fun for you.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. Yeah.
But.
Well, Sean definitely got bored. She never wanted to run a bar.
No.
Yeah, talking about power lunches, she just sort of opened, was like. Barden's closed down. It's like East London needs an independent music venue where the magic can happen, and did it. And then got bored of it, even though it was her own business, and you know, I think artistically a success. You know, it's done what she wanted, but she just sort of gradually did less and less work in it, and now she does barely nothing, just behind the scenes stuff. Because it's not her life ambition to be bucking bands and organising things. Yeah.
No, exactly. And I think it's...
Do you mean...
But I think it's a little bit different. I think she just opened the bar from just... Yeah, recognising that needed to function. Whereas you're talking...
But thanks for that.
Seems like you are excited about actually being in the...
In the space.
In the space. And being activated. And, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's right. We're interested in the you know, there's like a big interest in the
You're not just thinking, oh right, this sort of pub event space.
No, we're interested
needs
in
to exist.
Yeah,
you're
yeah.
like interested in like what it's going to be there, and
we're interested in the pub in itself,
this alternative
like,
business. That hence why you've been talking about it for a year. Is like,
yeah,
what can this be, you know.
And how, yeah. And you know, the site of a pub is of massive interest for us. Just because you can get, you know, like a good pub does get a real mix of people in there at different times. And I mean, I think Wetherspoons are really successful for that as well.
Totally, yeah. Yeah, I think it wasn't bad now having Wetherspoons.
No.
We both know we're fans of them, yeah.
Massive fans of the Spoons.
I think it's my favourite place to drink in Peckham, no question.
Yeah.
Because it's like the only place down there where, we've said this many times, where it's functioning as a pub.
Mm.
It's got the community in there.
Yeah. And it's certainly the same in Forest Hill.
They're not bars that look like pubs, are they? They're sort of like,
the
community. To do that, it takes a fucking long time, doesn't it? You know, to build up
it those links. It does, yeah. And you need to price things, you know, like that's kind of affordable for people. And I think these are sort of the things coming up for us, I think, is thinking about pricing. And but like I say...
So Tulse Hill has failed...
I wouldn't say it's failed. But I mean, we didn't put stuff on there. And we only had it until October anyway. So we had it for 8 weeks, I think.
Okay.
And just think we spent a long time kind of building the furniture and having to think about it. And yeah, it didn't work out, but
As a testing ground.
Yeah. And we were just, and we're all just like super busy at the moment.
Yeah.
But I think the thing that we are still having the kind of necessary conversations about the pub, which is almost, so at the very beginning, it was, and I think this, we lost sight of this a bit over the summer, but at the very beginning we said that it was a research project, and at the end, we would get a pub. But if we didn't, then the research would hold its own value as a body of research. So if we never get a pub, then we've still got all of this research.
Totally.
And I mean, the intent is to get a pub, but you know, like if it ended tomorrow, then we've still got like all of this knowledge.
Someone's
that we've built
to sort
up
of, like, live it for a couple of years, aren't they? Like, totally dedicate themselves to it.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. So we did, so we were in Aarhus, which is in Copenhagen, last weekend, with a kind of project called Trade Press Site, which is kind of run out of a gallery, and by a woman called Lise Gow, I can't remember her name, something like that. But so for that do you remember the Dole game, Francis Patrick Brady's game? It's like a role playing game that we played.
Okay, two words in
it. Yeah, that's right. So what happens is that hang on, my mic's dropped out. So for anyone that's listening to the podcast, we did a game called Dole, D-O-H-L, by Francis Patrick Brady. And we were running these bi-monthly meetings where we'd discuss ideas around the pub. And we'd do screenings and try and have small discussions and put food on. And one of these events was playing this game, which is thinking about future types of labour. So what happens is you get a job title, and then you get a suffix. I mean, you get two suffixes. So two suffixes. No, prefixes. Suffix goes at the end.
Yeah.
So you could be, this is massively simplified, you could be a macro anarchist cryptologist. And then, so the way that we played it at Enclave when you were there, Dan, is we then kind of discussed what kind of world would have a macro anarchist cryptologists, yeah, and what their job would be in that world and how they would interact with other people.
It's actually
in the job.
A very quick way to sort of like step outside your own head, isn't it?
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
It's sort of like instantly, like once you surrender yourself to the game, you sort of like,
yeah,
very quickly talking about quite big ideas.
Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And it worked really well and it was fun. And so for Aarhus, we tried a new version of a game, which we kind of adapted Dole into a
gallery.
Yeah, this was in a gallery. We adapted it into a pub. So rather than having a world,
yeah,
you had a kind of conceptual pub site, and
nice.
You the cards, the job titles were based on jobs in a pub. So you had the barman, the cleaner, the bouncer, the accountant, you had the DJ, you had the glass collector,
yeah,
and so on and so on. And then you got, it was slightly more simplified, so I think you got, you again, you got two prefixes, so you could be, and they were based on kind of like political movements or you know, or systems. So you could be like a capitalist, anarcho, again, I got anarchism on my mind, but you know, you could be anarcho capitalist bouncer or you know, a neoliberal feminist bar person. And then we acted it out. So you took on these jobs, and then we set up like a bar with
Oh right, you actually got into role playing.
Into role playing. So yeah, so we had like a bar with like different drinks options and like a till where with like a float in it, and like it was basically a bar setup and like a DJ booth.
Great.
And then people kind of acted out how they, you know, like how they thought they should respond given their prefixes.
Gosh,
and their job title.
The results, did everyone get drunk?
Yeah, everyone did get drunk. There were some really strong cocktails made.
Yeah.
And I think some people made some money. And it was good. And I think, like, yeah, maybe this sort of, like, concept of a pub is really useful for us at the moment. And again, kind of going back to We Should Have Been Here and Future of the Left, it was like,
yeah,
this game was something that we could all three of us be working on and talking about hosting and talking about like administration, which Future of the Left looks at,
yeah,
quite closely, and kind of, yeah, potential like business models, or you know, like I think the first session the first session at the pub that we did was run, I can't remember the job title, but they run it as a bar to fund a political campaign. So, which was quite interesting in you know, like how it dealt with like the profits from the bar, but then also kind of turned into like this weird like marketing tool for the bar. So then, you know, it kind of raised questions about how you know, like how you avoid turning a cause into like publicity, or
yeah,
or you know, is it good publicity, or do you, are you then serving more drinks because you've got that cause? So I think these games or these like conceptual spaces have like lots of opportunity to raise questions of like what we're interested in.
Totally. Did everyone loved it?
Yeah, it was really,
yeah,
good.
Great.
It was lovely.
Was it an artwork in itself or not? What you were doing? Did they think it was? Did anyone think it was? Or was it just
no, I think it was just... yeah. I don't think it was an artwork. It was an event.
Yeah.
Like all of our stuff, I think... And I'm not sure how you feel about this. With the salon, it's... With the pub... we've always been quite careful to say that if we're getting a pub, it's going to be a pub. It's not an art project that is a pub, or it's not a representation of a pub. It's a pub.
Yeah.
And it's there, you know, like we're there to make a profit and to sort of to pay ourselves with you know, with the money, with the income. And kind of, I think like our kind of political questions are about what you do with the profit. So, you know, like our initial plan was to rather than like accumulating capital, you distribute like profit as wages.
And at what point are you going to start making this research public? Are you going to start making this?
I think research will be made public. In
do you intend to
in the it? In the pub? I mean,
what if it doesn't happen?
I think we have a look at the research that we've got, and we decide what we've got to say.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, like, you might get the sense that I'm fairly reticent about about certain aspects of the pub. And I think we are, you know, like, we weren't too keen to speak about it at your first event. And I think there's a reason, the reason being for that is that we're still really, I don't think we feel like we're in a position to kind of make any clear statements. And and in our house, we were kind of initially invited to do a talk about the pub and what we've kind of learned, and I think we just feel that we still haven't like learned enough to provide like an authoritative voice on this kind of stuff. And like
to do the game instead.
The game felt a really nice solution to that, because it was much more of a dialogue with the people doing the game. And I don't know, I think
I guess that I'm finishing up now, but I guess that brings us to the next step.
Well, I think me and Andrew have got a reading group next week.
And they're semi-public, you know. Or is it invited?
It is invited, well, it's just me and Andrew. And then I think it's probably, we're probably going to ease off a bit over Christmas, and then see what comes up, really.
So there's nothing solid in at the moment.
But I mean, the research will continue. We've got a kind of, I think the next step is,
well, people are excited about it.
I think like really the next step is to meet up and talk about how we think Arhus went and what we can do. But I think definitely, like, for me, the game thing was really good.
Intrigued.
So do we have to do that bit where you show me the hair and I say, yeah, that looks great?
You do.
I'm really bad at that bit in the hairdresser.
I've only got one mirror, so I can't, like, do the bit where you show you the back.
That's fine.
Can you see the window?
Oh, the front looks good, yeah. Oh, yeah, that's really nice. Oh, perfect.
So it's a bit shorter there.
Yeah.
In the middle bit. I've cut it reasonably short at the top, but cut into it a lot, so there's a lot of texture in it.
Yeah, nice. That's great.
And then quite tight around the sides. Clean. And because it's cut with the scissors, it'll grow out much better.
Yeah.
And I think it looks...
That's genuinely like pretty good. I really like it.
Genuinely pretty good.
I know, but like when I was getting the train up, I thought, oh, I don't know why I agreed to do this, because I fucking hate going to the hairdressers. And what I really hate about it is having to talk to the hairdresser. I always get like a really dry mouth and really I get a bit nervous. They're quite like natural environments, aren't they? And it's just like,
definitely.
And at the end, I'm always like, they show me the hair and I'm just like, yeah, it looks great.
Yes.
I just need to get out of here. But this looks brilliant.
Oh, 17 years in the game, mate.
Yeah. 17 years.
That's mad, isn't it?
That's really mad. Where was your first job?
That's half my life.
Where was your first salon? Chef.
Stockport.
Stockport. Got an amazing shopping centre, haven't they? Stockport. Is it?
Yeah. I went there recently. I was like an hour and a half to kill, and it was
tough.
Cross an hour. Oh.